Why don't we go from right to left and just say your name, where you're from, and where you're up to.
Sure. So my name's Jai Wright. I'm in a town called Mackay, planting a church up there, so I've just been there since January this year. For those who don't know Mackay, think Brisbane and then go 10,000 k's, 1,000 k's north from there, so it's a long way up. 100,000 people, a lot of people moving to the area, so that's us.
Thanks, mate. I'm Clayton Fopp. I'm from Adelaide, from Mount Barker, actually, which is... I'm actually not sure what the equivalent is in other towns. On a good day, I can get into the centre of Adelaide in 35 minutes. So, like Sydney, that's in the suburbs. But I get letters from the Prime Minister, "Dear Regional Australian."
Wow.
So we're in a sort of funny urban fringe kind of place. And we planted a church in February last year called Trinity Mount Barker.
And I'm Dave, and I'm from Tasmania. If you know Tasmania, we're near Hobart, about 15 minutes south, in a place called Kingston. And Kingston, it's one of those sort of places, I guess, that's changed radically in the last 10 years. It used to be mainly paddocks and a few little houses here and there and all that kind of stuff. But the area that we're in now is just heaps of development, people buying new blocks, lots of young families moving in. It's that kind of a place. And we're getting on to about 4 years of a church plant that we started there.
Cool. Yeah. Mm. David's let us know what his demographic is. Can you just share, what your demographics are?
Yeah, lots of young families. So Mount Barker is the fastest growing inland town in Australia, second only to the Gold Coast in terms of building approvals and things like that. So lots of land opening up and lots of young families. Also significant number of retirees and downsizers moving in. But the big bump in the demographic is young families.
Mackay, it's similar. It's young families as well, but it's all growing on the back of the coal mining that's happening in central Queensland there. So it's just booming. I mean, there's so many people moving to town, so many jobs that they've got to try and fill people for that they can't physically fit everyone in the town to work the jobs. Wow. They just can't get rentals, can't buy houses, that type of thing. So they're kind of encouraging the mums at home with kids to get out and work so that they can get all the jobs done that are there to do. So it's growing hugely as well. Yeah, blue collar, because it's mining. Yeah.
Okay, Andrew is actually going to come up and talk to us about models afterwards, Andrew Hurd. But can you, starting with David, can you just share what model you're working from in Tassie?
If people are familiar with the Crowded House in Sheffield in the UK and the sort of Total Church book, and where that's the kind of thing that we're doing. So our church is structured now around five gospel communities. And I guess they're more or less like house churches in lots of ways. So pastoral care, discipleship, most of our youth ministry, evangelism, ideally all that stuff actually happens within the gospel community context. But I guess unlike a more traditional approach to a house church, all the gospel communities gather together regularly for a meeting that would look much like a lot of the sort of low-trapping type church plant meetings on a Sunday for their main biblical teaching. They sit under the one eldership as well, and all the admin, all that kind of stuff comes through centrally too. So that's, is that enough? Is that sort of,
For someone who's never heard of Total Church, what would you say are the strengths and weaknesses to Total Church, the model itself? Because it's over the last couple of years, I've heard a lot of buzz about it, and there's a few plants in Sydney that are really going with it. So you're in on it, and you obviously like it. What are the strengths and weaknesses that you see about your model?
I think the biggest strength is that it's a model where you go... We all know community is really important. We all see that it's really important throughout the New Testament. We see it's important in evangelism. We see it's important in discipleship. All of those things that we want to be doing as churches. It's a way of setting up church, I guess, that takes that really seriously and wants to really focus attention on trying to realise, I guess, some of the things that you see in the New Testament about community. So, I mean, I know it's not the only way, but I guess some of the actual things that I think, I mean, maybe starting from a leadership level and kind of working downwards. The first thing that I think is great about it is that it forces you to be, and constantly forces you to be really serious about raising up leaders. We won't plant a GC now, or sorry, gospel community now, unless we've got a leadership team of at least four, which means that you get limited growth-wise really quickly. And we initially got caught out by this at the beginning, where we started to grow quite quickly, suddenly realised that our gospel communities were getting way too big, and we went on the ball in terms of raising up leaders. And
can I just ask, when you talk about too big, what does that look like?
We try to keep them around, I guess a big one would be getting to between 15 and 20 adults, and anywhere near to up that many kids as well.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a big one. That's getting too big, really.
Yep,
yeah.
Sure.
You're constantly having to think through raising up leaders. I think the other thing, too, is that it's the leaders you're raising up are people that you're having to learn to teach, to pastor, to disciple, to train others, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's leaders training leaders sort of training is what you have to do. And then I think the other thing, I mean, it was interesting listening to Greg speak before. It's a model that really forces you to engage, I think, with people that often in the past anyway I've found it tempting to flee from or not engage that much with. And because you're committing to be in community with these people, and it's relatively small, you can't really hide from them.
Yeah, sure.
So you've got to, we had a situation this year with a couple in our gospel community that that really hurt my wife and I quite a lot, and there just isn't sort of the out, I suppose. You've got to process that, work that through, deal with that. So that sort of stuff.
And that's both. Or would you see that as both a strength and a weakness?
I guess, yeah. I suppose a lot of these things can be strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
I mean, going to the leader thing too, I mean, that's probably the greatest strength, but also maybe the greatest struggle, in that you're actually handing over a lot of ministry to people that aren't staff or... whenever you're trying to get someone else to do something or train someone else in something, often the standard isn't going to be the same as when you do it yourself. So it means because you're constantly working with these guys and women to actually do a lot of that sort of pastoral discipleship, evangelism ministry, and teach others to do the same, that's a constant tension, I guess, that the quality control. So that's another hard thing.
Cool.
Don't
we
stop?
No. We could keep going, but we'll hear from the other brothers. Clayton, do you just want to talk us through with either microphone your model that you're trying to build and you're working out of?
Yeah. Okay. We used what you might call a mother-daughter model, and with a twist in that we're a granddaughter. So our mother church, our planting church, was itself a church plant 9 years. Before we launched, and so we've got this kind of three-tiered thing going now. But we took a large group of people from the sending church, about 50, 60 adults and kids combined figure, most of whom lived more or less in the region that we planted in. We're only 15 minutes door-to-door from our sending church, so pretty close, and there's basically nothing in between. They're almost... adjacent exits on the freeway, sort of the one freeway that Adelaide has. So we're quite close, door to door, 15 minutes, and we took this large group of people. Nearly everybody who we started with was part of that sending church. We picked up a couple of others, but we really took that, what we call the starter group, from one church with a couple of ring-ins, various other people who had connections to Trinity and so knew what we were planning. Strengths and weaknesses. Yeah. There's a few strengths. For one thing, it was a model that Trinity had done before. So there are now five churches in what we call the Trinity Network, and four of those are church plants. One is the original church in the city. So each of the times we church planted in the last, since 2001, we'd used this model, a large group of people who lived in a geographic area or centred on a geographic area, and use them as the starter group. So we had some idea of how to do it. It also meant that we were able to take, we talk about the Trinity DNA, and we were able to take Trinity DNA with us. That there was a lot of people on the ground from day one, and even in the lead up, who shared our vision for a church that would plant churches, who shared our vision for a church that would long to see people come to know Jesus, who shared our vision for a church that would unashamedly teach the Bible week in, week out, and in every other form that happens during the week. So we had shared DNA early on. And so what that meant was it took more than a year until I had someone on my leadership team who hadn't been part of one of the other Trinity churches. Now, that can make you, you know, blink it and whatever, and perhaps you don't get outside views, but I wasn't fighting battles about core issues early on because we had so many people on board who had the same kind of vision for the sort of church that we wanted to be part of. It also meant that there were so many people around on Sundays from day one that we weren't just killing ourselves making Sunday happen. And we were able to invest a lot in community, particularly existing community relationships, because the people mostly lived in the area. They weren't trying to form new relationships, weren't just seeing their all of a sudden, oh, I've got some targets for my evangelism. They had friends, they had neighbours already in various community sort of situations. So we weren't killing ourselves trying to make sure that Sundays happen. There's some disadvantages. A lot of people means, well, a lot of people. There's a lot of people to get around. I clearly remember when we went, basically hit the 100 mark on Sunday, and there was all of a sudden people I didn't talk to on Sunday. Once upon a time, I spoke to everybody in the building, and then basically when we hit that magic 100 number, I suddenly, oh, there was people there who I didn't get a chance to talk to. And that can mean that the ministry then falls to a few 80-20 rule and all those kinds of things. The other thing is because we're so close, there's been a fair bit of drift in the, whatever, 21 months since we planted from the sending church to us. I don't know whether it's because we seem young and cool or something, but because so many people had relationships there and those kinds of things, we've seen a constant kind of drift. And why sort of stand at the door every Sunday telling people, go back where you came from, we don't really want you, or words to that effect. but we've seen a little bit of that. And that's been a challenge for us because we don't really want to pull people out of our sending church. We'd much prefer non-Christians turn up. But that's a challenge that we're working through. Yeah.
Yep. Jai, your model and strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah. So our model is kind of the polar opposite to Clayton. We're labelled the parachute in model. So it's basically pack up the family and lob off to a new town and start a church. How do you do that? I guess the distinctive thing is that we don't have a clear mother church that we've planted out of. We've got partner churches and individuals in a whole bunch of different churches and across denominations that are supporting us financially. So I guess the big challenge for us is trying to just gather that core team, the launch team, to get things kicked off. We're kind of talking in those partner churches, trying to encourage people to move up with us, but I mean, realistically, you're talking either from Sydney or Brisbane, still 1,000 k's, it's a long way for people to move. I guess other ways we're trying to contact Christians in the area that were interested in the sort of church we were on about, and obviously once we got there, into the outreach and that type of thing. So I guess the reality for us was that once we moved there January this year, we ended up gathering a group of 7 adults, 5 kids, and we sort of stuck with them for 6 months. We did a launch pretty much just to get the word out about the church and the local community, and we've had pretty much, though, we had 30 people rock up to the launch. We've had 20 people on a Sunday since then coming along. That's a bit of a fringe, a slightly expanded core group. Yeah, and so that's where we're at. So we're kind of like the one gospel community.
Yeah.
Dave's church.
So Jai, what does evangelism look like in your model?
Yeah, I guess it's tricky to figure out because we do have so few people to even just to run a Sunday meeting. I mean, obviously, it's a very cut-down meeting. We're just meeting in a library at 4 o'clock in the Arvo, so I don't think people have the same expectation as they come along of what they're going to get as they come to church. How do we go about it? I mean, initially, we were doing some door knocking. So we did two sort of phases of door knocking, sort of a quarter through the year, and then halfway through the year, we're encouraging people on our launch team to get out and make relationships. But realistically, we had a few of them that came out of town, so along with us and them, we're all starting from scratch really with those evangelistic contacts. So I guess that's one encouragement at the end of all this, is that a year down the track, and just see for us and also for a lot of the launch team, they are really making relationships with unbelievers, because they've kind of got to. they don't have that many people to hang out with at church, so it's just the reality that that's going to happen.
Yeah. And so Clayton, in your context, I take it you've got people in there, and it'll be interesting for me, and I'm sure others, to hear, are you running events to bring people to? Are you training up the core to, you know, in Two Ways to Live or something like that? Or what are you doing? What's your strategy evangelistically?
Yeah, there's a few things on the go. So we do a little bit of event stuff. So last year we had a mission in the middle of the year, If I Were God, I'd... and we got people to submit questions and those sorts of things. So that was based around Sunday mornings. Yep. So getting people to invite their friends along. This year, our major evangelistic focus is a Carols event, Carols by Glowstick, in a couple of weeks, December 17. And that is a deliberately evangelistic event, and we're asking people to bring their friends along and to be praying sort of 6 weeks out for their friends so they'd come along and all those kinds of things. So there's some of those event kind of things. The other thing we wanted to do was to build accountability in evangelism into just relationships in the church. So before we started, we had a thing we called Starting Six, and we gave out postcards. And we asked people to write down the names of six friends they were praying for in the lead up to starting the church. And it became such a part of who we are and what we were doing that in conversation people would ask each other, oh, well, how are your starting six going? And we got to know each other's friends' names, and so we could pray for each other's friends and those kinds of things. So we wanted to, right from the, even before we started, say we want to be praying that people will get converted in this church. And that's kind of followed us through a bit, and we're in the process now of looking to grow to two services next year, and in lots of ways relaunching almost as another church plant. And so we're going to go back to Starting Six and praying for friends and those kinds of things. And then alongside of that is the things like Two Ways to Live training and running Introducing God and all those other bits and pieces, that coursed kind of evangelistic stuff, training people in one-on-one and... Twice, two Christmases, we've done a little bit of door knocking, which is really as much for the training exercise, as much for, you know, humanly speaking, expecting people to get converted out of door knocking. But it's a great experience for our people. And God can do whatever he likes, of course.
Yeah. Dave, what does evangelism look like for you guys on the ground?
We've got a sort of a...
You just want to use them.
Oh, yeah, sorry. We've got a kind of a four-pronged thing where we look at... sort of the four ingredients, if you like, of prayer, gospel proclamation and relationships. But then the other thing that's maybe a little bit different in our model that doesn't necessarily always come across in other churches I've been a part of is exposure to Christian community, and seeing that as a big apologetic, I guess, for the gospel that we're trying to proclaim. So that kind of breaks into two ways. There's sort of a reactionary side, and what we mean by that is that we really want our people in the context that they just sort of find themselves in, you know, whether that be a job or a hobby or where they live, to see those areas as mission fields. So to actually approach the people that they're encountering in those contexts with intentionality and to try and build relationships and bring the gospel to people like that. But the other thing that we're trying to do now is actually encourage the gospel communities to be proactive too in actually, as little communities, seeking out areas that they can actually go together and connect with people and do those things, pray, bring the gospel, expose them to Christian community, all that kind of stuff. So that's something that we've just started to work on this year, actually encouraging them to think together as communities. Well, you know, what's happening in our... local area, what are some of the other things that are happening in the city that we can get on board with? What are things that we can do together to meet people and connect with people and reach people?
Can I just follow up that with another question? Because you said earlier that there was a couple in your gospel community that hurt you and your wife. And so within the community, there's tension. But part of your evangelistic strategy is to come and say, come and see how good this community is. How does that work out? Because on one side, my natural reaction would be to go, don't see this gospel community because we're fighting or whatever's happening. And on the other side, you're saying, no, this, the gospel changes this community.
Yeah.
So how do those two work itself out, especially in your situation?
Yeah, this has been one of the things I think our people have struggled with a lot, is because we're also really insistent on making our gospel communities very diverse. So a lot of our people are like, well, how am I meant to do evangelism when I'm sort of 20-something and I've got an 85-year-old bloke and then some people that are my parents' age and then a whole heap of kids? And let alone when there's chaos going. But I think that's the magic of the gospel, and I think this is the thing that actually makes them spectacular.
Yeah.
And different, because I think if you look around, there's all sorts of great community groups in our society, but they're all people that are very like, you know, the same as each other, or into the same things, or around the same age, or very strongly connected in those ways, whereas the magic of Jesus' community is that they love one another the way that he loves us, and the spectacular thing about that is that you know, he's loving a group of people that are just so very unlike him, and rebels against him, and he gives everything, gives his life to bring reconciliation and peace and love. And so we're actually not ashamed of that. I think that's where part of the magic is, actually. Yeah. Say, look, you know, this is what it's like, and this is why the gospel can be such a wonderful thing in this world, and why it's so very different to what people are used to seeing, and it's what makes us really different. So, yeah.
Cool, thanks. Yeah. What I'll do is I'll just change tack, I guess, and we'll start with Jai again. Jai, you parachuted in, and you've got a maybe 20 people at church. What have you found really challenging? What have been your big struggles this year?
Yeah, challenges for us. I guess it's just in, like, yes, really it's a huge challenge just growing that launch team. So yeah. You feel like there's a lot of work just to really get up and going, because yeah. I mean, next year for us is really going to be more of the same. It's kind of regathering this launch team, a few fringe people that we've got, and trying to push them ahead for another year, another launch almost. Like, yeah. It's kind of like phase two of it all. In terms of other challenges, I mean, because we're independent, we're carrying the load of admin and that type of thing that maybe other church plants would have the benefit of. So that's been a big load, setting up constitutions, figuring out payrolls, banking, all that type of thing.
Yeah.
And even just in relationships, I mean, I think it's one of the strengths as well that doing the parachute model, you can start with a new DNA. Can actually create a new culture, and that's been a real positive for us as we've kicked off. But it also means that you've got people coming from these diverse backgrounds, and it's just slow, hard work trying to figure out, where are these guys coming from? Are they leadership material? Can we step them up into leadership roles or not? And just making those connections with unbelievers, because we move from outside the area. It's slow, hard work relationally.
Yeah. Clayton, challenges?
I think as we've got bigger, keeping the evangelistic edge happening. So people have joined us, some people from other churches, where even Christian people had never really been called upon to think, who are the lost people I know, and how are they hearing about Jesus through me? And so keeping that on the go. There's been another one. There's one of the local sort of mainstream denominational churches in our region is in a really tough spot at the moment, and scores of people have left. And for a variety of reasons, my leadership team decided to send me along to talk to the pastor and to raise an issue of incorrect doctrine that seemed to be being taught in his church. And that was a hard thing, and that consumed me for weeks. Maybe like Greg, you know, I don't have a thick skin at all. And so that was something that I was concerned about and worried about and reflected about. And that was a big deal. We picked up lots of people from this church. The other local churches had picked up lots of people. There were lots of people who just had stopped going to church, full stop. Partly as a result of really what is doctrinal error being taught in this place. And so that was a hard conversation and a hard process, and it was an uncomfortable meeting. And I just thought, gee, I wish I could just ignore this and get on with the sort of stuff I'd much rather be doing. But we really were convinced it was important for me to have that conversation. So that was sort of an external thing that I never really considered I'd be doing. But yeah, that was really tough.
Yep. Dave?
Oh, there's lots. I think one of the hardest things with the model that we're using is it requires our leaders to be really proactive, to take a lot of initiative and to be very intentional. And because there's not a lot in the way of events and we're trying to get people to actually use the stuff of ordinary life, and these people are busy people, most of them got young families, most of them work full time, a lot of my time, in fact most of my time, goes into mentoring them and meeting with them and constantly trying to keep them accountable and inspire them and give them ideas and things like that. So that's really hard going, and that's just ongoing all the time. And I think the other thing for them, like, it's interesting. We every month I get them all together and we all meet up, and in that time, one of the big things we do is just share stories as to how the different communities have gone, and the triumphs and the lows and the highs, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And the last one that we had was, it started off being a bit of a success as well, I think, in a way, but it started off being a bit of a downer because I think a lot of them had just had a month where they were really wrestling with people, and because you've got new Christians in those communities, you've got difficult people, you've got people that aren't necessarily as on board as you'd want them to be, or still wrestling to get their heads around the whole thing. A lot of them were just like, it's just been a really, really hard month. It was a real struggle. It was really tough. And the encouraging thing was at the end that we looked back and went, well, look, you're finding it hard because no one's been left behind and you've been working on all these people and trying to move them forward. But that's a struggle. It's a big challenge. Yeah, it's been hard.
I want to flip the switch and go on to encouragement. But before I do, I want to ask, I'll just throw a question out there because I'm interested to hear this. I don't know about you guys, but I find I come here and I hear about Clayton's 100 people, Greg I think's at 600, Hurdy's at 250,000 or something like that. I'm not sure. There's a lot of people, and one of the things that is in church planning is this fascination with numbers and how many people. Like, I was in a lunch with a couple of church planners, and they went around the circle and the question was, how many are you running, as if we're running cattle and that kind of thing. First of all, when you are hearing brothers who God has blessed with numbers more than your own, what does that do to you? And secondly, how do you guard your heart against jealousy? I didn't set this up, so I've just asked this off the
cuff. I don't believe them. Yeah. I just halve their numbers. That's sort of in my head.
Yeah, good. Just tell yourself they lied, and you're moving. Okay, cool.
It is a trap, and we've seen significant growth, and so that's. If I can actually flip the question a little bit, my problem is a little bit the opposite. That we've seen significant growth. And then I start thinking it's all about me and how great I am. Yeah. And so for me, that's a real danger. And every now and then when I start thinking, wow, our building seats 200, we've got 170, this is pretty good, I must be a pretty good pastor. God in his kindness tends to bring something along that reminds me that I'm not very good at all, which is always encouraging. I think we just need to be reminded and keep reminding ourselves and each other that it's not the numbers. And I try not to talk about the numbers. It's the first question that anyone asks me, sort of any pastor in Adelaide, when they know that I'm church planning, how many are you running? As you say, it's like cattle or something. But what I try and do, and I need to keep doing, is then just thinking about the ones, and that person who came, that person matters to God. And that person who came in not ever having sat under the word of God actually at one level should matter more to me than the 20 people who transferred in out of some other church. Now, it's not to say that we like some people more than others, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
For me to preach to one person or to care for one person or to sit down with one person for whom this is all absolutely new, and in the kindness of God to be able to be part of their journey from running away from God to being drawn to God, you know, that's such a privilege. And if I could keep reminding myself of what a privilege that is, then the fact that I don't have 600 or 800 or whatever, suddenly, it seems a bit less important for a while, and then I hit the reset button, wherever Greg is, and then I start wanting to be 800 again.
Yeah. Joy, do you want to share along those lines?
I think I'm glad I had time to reflect on the question. But I think the middle of the year I preached a sermon just from Romans 5, just about how we're made right with God through Jesus, and it kind of goes on there to talk about rejoicing in suffering, and it talks about why that is, because it produces perseverance, character and hope, and I think that's the thing for me, because I think it is a right expectation. I mean, we know that Christ is building his church. That's got to be our passion. That's got to be where we're pushing. And so in a sense, it is suffering in the midst of that, as we don't see the reality that we're looking forward to come about. I just think as I reflect back on the year, that's God's taught me so much about perseverance, because it's at those kind of low points where people just don't rock up to church and your numbers are a bit low and you're thinking, where's this all going? But it's just been a great chance to come back to God and say, what are you doing with this? And just to really grow in perseverance and go, no, I'm supposed to be here and got to keep pushing ahead with this. So I guess it's in the midst of that, it's just turning back to God and finding, that perseverance that he works by his power, and repenting from the jealousy.
But that's very hard, and I think we're 3 years in March, just Luke hit it on the nail that we've all got an expectation when we plant that, we'll be at X numbers or whatever, and when God doesn't do that, our heart can question, what are we doing, and that can be very discouraging. And so Dave, when you hear about the brothers who God has blessed so much, how do you preach the gospel to yourself in a way that keeps you on target?
Look, I mean, to kind of confess a bit, I've got the added. I mean, as you can tell, I kind of really believe in what we're trying to do, and our model and stuff, and that brings with it an extra layer of sinfulness where it would suit me really well if we were 600, 700, 1,000 people strong, because I could say, look, it works, it really does. Yeah, and it's one of the first things, I even got asked it this morning, you meet someone, you say what you're doing, and then one of the first questions is, yeah, but does it actually work? You know, like, sounds great, but yeah, it'd be nice to say, well, yeah, it does, because, yeah. So there's an added level there, and I think the great thing about that is it forces me back theologically to what I believe about community and what God wants for us, and how that fits into his mission for this world and his end for mankind. And so it forces me back there to, I guess, a point where I go, well, actually, it's not necessarily all about pragmatic things anyway. And then I think a lot of the stuff that Clayton was saying where, okay, it's not 6, 7, 8, however many, 100 that is, you're seeing a lot of growth in people. We are seeing some people become Christians, and it's again, rejoicing in all of those things and going, well, this is how God's working here at the moment and working in us, and there's a lot to celebrate there as well.
And Jai, we'll start with you this last question, brother. What have you found encouragement from, maybe in the Word, maybe in what God has been doing? What have you found encouraging over the last year as you planted?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different things. I think just recently, even just the partner churches that we've had, that's just been such an encouraging relationship, as we've had people throwing money at us, praying for us. We even had a couple from partner church in Foster just decide to take their holiday en route past Mackay so they could drop into church, take us out for dinner and just bless us. And so that was... wow, that blew us away. So that's encouraging. Yeah, it's been encouraging working, I guess because it is a smaller group, just working closely with the few core guys that we've got and just seeing them grow and kind of step up to leadership positions. Like we've had a bunch of times where we've done something, we've gone out and door knocked or got someone to teach kids church and the person will turn around to me afterwards and say, that's the first time I've done that. Yeah. And I'm kind of, what? So it's awesome seeing people forced to step up.
Yeah, cool. Clayton?
I guess in terms of what God's been doing, just seeing people inviting their friends along, having gospel conversations with their friends, talking to friends about Jesus, those kinds of things. As I said, we're in a position we're trying to work out what we do in our building now, and the fact that people are saying, we'll need to do something, won't we? We can't just exist in this comfortable, you know, 80% full in the building. We need to make room for new people. Shows me that they get it. They get what we're on about. It's not about us and our friends getting together and having a great time on Sunday. We want more people to be able to be part of this community, and so that's a great encouragement. And then just seeing what God is doing in people's lives. You know, one super quick story. Got a phone call, 8 o'clock one morning, one of our members, single mum, she says, my ex-husband's got some questions about Christian stuff. Can he talk to you? And I said, yeah, absolutely. So literally 3 minutes later, my phone rings. G'day, I'm Hannah's ex. Got some questions, can I come and talk to you? I said, yeah, I'm in a meeting most of the day, or till lunchtime. I'll be back in the office at 12. Okay, I'll be there at 12, he says. So he rocks up at 12 o'clock. We talk about Christian things. We read a little bit of Luke's gospel. He leaves at 3 o'clock and then comes to church and sits in church. Now, he has a girlfriend, now fiance, who he also brings along to church. And so in church, we have ex-wife, daughter, ex-husband, fiance of ex-husband, ex-wife's mum, ex-wife's dad, sitting in a row. And I think, wow, isn't God good? Now, ex-husband's fiance, in God's great kindness, has got converted, and we're thrilled to bits. Still working on ex-husband, and he's one of the guys that I'm meeting up with and reading the Bible. And I just think, wow, you know, who would ever have thought, looking at that row in church on Sunday morning, that they could all sit there in a row together, sitting under God's word, singing his praises. So, yeah, that's been a great encouragement.
Dave?
Yeah, I think for me, the thing that's been most encouraging is that this year we're starting to see, well, most of actually our gospel communities have really got the gospel mission side of being a gospel community. And so for a number of them have got people that they've been working at, you know, with relationships and including and all the rest of it, but they've a couple of them now have actually started running these courses that we do that go from Romans 1 to 5 that just explain Christianity really clearly to outsiders. And one of them resulted in a baptism yesterday, so that was fantastic. That's a massive encouragement to see that work right through. And then I think on a more personal note for me, as I said before, our gospel community has been really hard work this year. It's been a real struggle and I've despaired at numerous points and just wanted to give up on it. But at the beginning of November, we sat down and I had to pinch myself when we did this, and we actually just all opened our diaries together over a meal and just planned a month of mission together. And pretty much every week through that month, we had something on where we were involved in things or going to connect with people and to go, well, actually, you know, even there, like, we've just seen such growth and to see these people passionate about wanting to reach people and do things together as a little community. That's hard to beat.
Okay, great. Yeah. We've got a few minutes more. I'll ask one more question. I had this one up my sleeve. What does the next year look like for you guys? First of all, just share with us what you're preaching through next year, if you've got it planned out, and what else, you know, other things for next year. What does next year look like? Dave, do you want to kick us off again?
Yep. So I think we've done a lot of big changes over the last 3 years. That's been quite big paradigmy stuff for people. So we're trying to ease off those sorts of changes and go more with just zeroing in. I think it's time we kind of went back over God's mission in the world, and that's going to be a big focus for us. So, and just really wanting to up, I guess, that sort of mission side of things. So that's a big focus. As far as the preaching program goes, we're doing the Sermon on the Mount and Zechariah, and I think we're going to hit James as well, and I think that's about as far as we've got so far. Yeah.
Cool. Clayton?
In terms of preaching, we'll kick off in January with what we call a foundation series, so some of key doctrines of church and what church should look like. And then we're picking up some series we started in the last couple of years, Genesis, John and Acts, as well as an evangelistic series in the middle, What Would Jesus Say To... dot, 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 Muhammad, Julie, Gellard, etc., etc. In terms of what else things will look like, we're looking at growing to two services next year, two morning services probably, as a way of creating more space and letting more people come in. And we're also looking at expanding our kids' ministry. You know, when Spurgeon used to go home from church, his wife Susanna would ask him how many people got converted that day, which is a high expectation, isn't it, every week. But he used to count kids as one and adult converts only as a half, because he thought they were only half as useful for the kingdom of God because they'd be dead soon. Apparently. So we're looking, on that basis, looking at starting a kids club and an additional Sunday morning kids program. And so that's exciting, and we're seeing lots of kids come along and get converted and take the gospel home to their parents and drag their parents along to church as well. So,
Jai?
So I think, like I said, the start of next year, we're going to try and pull together, I guess, launch team phase again, so phase two of the church. So that'll be, we've got a few people, new people moving to town, just gathering the existing team, recasting vision and trying to talk through. I mean, really, we're still, because we're small, we're still figuring out the direction and trying to get everyone on board with that. So there'll be a bit of a phase of that. Then looking to preach through the second half of Acts. We did the first half of Acts last year. I'm just looking at church and God's mission from there. And then we'll probably hit a bit of Deuteronomy. We haven't done big Old Testament one yet, so we'll have a look at that, and it kind of gives us a little bit of an opportunity. We're normally looking for something that we can put in a flyer to just communicate with the community. We sort of send out 10,000 flyers every quarter, so something that we can engage with the community about, maybe it'd be parenting or something that comes up in Deuteronomy, and a bit of John's Gospel at the end of the year.
So, great.